to the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 15. 2 Samuel, chapter 15. Read the first 23 verses. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared his chariots and horses, and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, "Of what city art thou?" And he said, that is, they would reply, "Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel," and then, of course, named the tribe. And Absalom said unto him, "See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee." Absalom said, "Moreover, O that I were made a judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice." And was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, "I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord." And the king said unto him, "Go in peace." So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron." And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they were in their simplicity. That is, they were following Absalom at this time out of ignorance, these 200 men. And they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. And there came a messenger to David, saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." And David said unto all his servants that were with him in Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, for we shall not escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword." And the king's servants said unto the king, "Behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint." And the king went forth and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth and all the people after him and tarried in a place that was far off. And all his servants passed on beside him, and all the Clarethites and the Phelethites and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also in exile. Wherefore thou camest but yesterday? Should I this day make thee go up and down with us? Seeing I go whither I may return thou, and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." And David said to Ittai, "Go and pass over." And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men and all the little ones that were with him. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also him passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. These verses, of course, record the revolt of Absalom against King David. Absalom was David's third son, born from a heathen woman named Maacah. She was the daughter of the king of Geshur, a city of Samaria. We read this in 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. We'll not turn there to save time, but you can go there in your own time. It was Absalom, of course, who murdered his half-brother Amnon for raping his sister Tamar. We read of that in 2 Samuel chapter 13. After Absalom murdered his brother, he then fled to his mother's hometown, and he remained in exile there for 3 years. But he was able to return with the help of David's general Joab. And we read that in 2 Samuel chapter 14. We see that David forgave Absalom. Notice in chapter 14 and verse 33. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. And the king kissed Absalom, that Absalom, of course, being his son. Then we come to chapter 15 and verse 1, and we read, and it came to pass after this, referring to what would follow David receiving Absalom back. Absalom, instead of repaying his father's mercy and receiving him, Absalom set out to dethrone his father, set out to undermine his father's kingdom. We read in verse 6, so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Then verse 12, we read, for the people increased continually with Absalom. A messenger would come to David with the news, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom, there in verse 13. This, of course, was very disheartening news to David. And he and his servants would flee from Jerusalem. We see that in verse 14. These servants were men who were loyal to David. They were united to David. They were very devoted to David. And they were submissive to the will of David. And there is quite a contrast between these followers of David and those who had their hearts stolen by Absalom. I want to speak this morning on the danger of having our hearts stolen. And we'll preach from this passage again this evening with an entirely different application, Lord willing. We want to view Absalom this morning as a type of Satan. Absalom, first and foremost, even though he was the son of David, he was an enemy. He was an enemy of David. As an enemy of David, he had hostile feelings toward David. And he was set out and he sought to oppose and he sought to resist David. Absalom, like Satan, was hungry for power, hungry for position. He was bloodthirsty. He was full of fury. He was a very fraudulent individual. And he was a very alluring individual, just like Satan. Absalom was a very proud man. He was powerful. He was wicked. He was self-willed and he was deceitful. Just like the devil. Absalom, like Satan, was very resolute He was restrained by no sentiments. He certainly should have had sentiments toward his father David, but he was restrained by no sympathy, by sentiments. He was restrained by no pity. He was restrained by no sympathy. Just like the devil. Absalom, like Satan, has his goals. And the goal of Absalom was to replace David as king. And the goal of Satan is to replace the king in your life. Absalom, having this goal, he had plans. He had techniques. He had tricks and he had traps. All aimed at accomplishing his goal. So it is with Satan. As you look at Absalom, like Satan, he was a master in manipulation. And he would use whatever, and he would use whoever, didn't matter to him, he would use whatever and whoever to achieve his goal of replacing the king. Absalom, like Satan, was an opportunist. He did not let an opportunity pass by. So Absalom is a type of Satan. Now we want to view Absalom at work. Keeping in mind, he is a type of Satan. Satan works the same way. First of all, Absalom set out not against the enemies of David, but against the subjects of David. So it is with Satan today. Satan is far, far more interested in the subjects of God than he is the enemies of God. He already has the enemies of God where he wants them. And now his plan is to move the subjects of God over into the camp of the enemies of God. And Satan is a master at it. Absalom was, again, he wanted to accomplish his goal of removing the king. But he was after something specific. He was after the subjects of David, and he was after something specific in the subjects of David. He was after their hearts. He was out to diminish and to take away their affections for David. He was out to diminish and take away their zeal for David. He was out to diminish and take away their sense of loyalty and their sense of devotion to David. And as we view Absalom at work, it is important to remember that what Absalom did was the result of his enmity toward David. It is important that we remember that. Satan is our enemy. There is no question about that. But I think sometimes we put too much emphasis on Satan being our enemy when the emphasis really should be Satan is the enemy of God. And everything he does is inspired by his enmity toward the Lord. And everything that Absalom did was inspired by his enmity and his disdain for his father David. We need to remember that. Satan, of course, is an enemy and hater of God. And it is such hatred and enmity that inspires his activities. That inspires his energies. Satan is out to diminish and to take away your love for God. First, he seeks to diminish it. The next step is to take it away. Satan works in a very particular order. You can see it all through the Word of God. That's why Satan is not hard to predict. You can see how he works. And Satan is out to diminish, first of all, and then to take away your zeal for the Lord, your sense of loyalty for God, your sense of devotion and obligation to God. Absalom was out to oppose and to stop the work of David. And he knew that the best way to do that was to go after the subjects of David. And Satan is out to oppose the work of God. And he knows the best way to do that is to go after the subjects of God. And that's how Satan works today. So there's Absalom. With all this hostility and animosity in his heart toward David, setting out to dethrone David. In order to do this, he set his eyes on the subjects of David. You can mark it down. Child of God, member of Home Baptist Church, Satan has set his eye upon you to accomplish his goal. Jesus told Peter, Satan hath desired to have you. Yes, Satan hated Peter, but that was not the main reason that Satan desired to have Peter. The main reason that Satan desired to have Peter was his hatred for the Lord. And that's true of you and I as well. Absalom set his eyes upon the subjects of David, and he set out to get an advantage over these individuals, to diminish their consecration, to turn them aside from the cause of David, and to draw them into his own ways. And this is exactly what Satan does. But let's look at how Absalom began to work. First of all, he carefully cultivated an exciting and an enticing image. He did not say to the subjects of David, I am the enemy of David, and I hate David, and I am out to dethrone David. Anyone who's interested, come join me. No, that's not how he works. Notice verse 1. Absalom, this is after he is received back by David, Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. We read in 2 Samuel 13 and verse 29 that the other sons of David rode mules. But we read here of Absalom that he prepared himself chariots and horses. Quite a difference from a mule. These chariots and horses have been prepared not for speed. And we know that because there were also 50 men to run before him. So he didn't need these chariots and horses for speed. He prepared these chariots and horses to make an impression. It was all for show. To make an impression upon the subjects of David. These chariots and horses were prepared to have an impact, to have an influence upon the subjects of David. And Satan today is out to make an impression upon the servants of God. He's out to impact and influence the lives of the servants of God. Why? Because of his hatred for the Lord. Secondly, notice that Absalom was very diligent in his work. Verse 2, and Absalom rose up early. He rose up early. So there he is with his chariots and horses early in the morning. He rose up early out of hatred for David. He rose up early out of utter disdain for David. He rose up early longing to have the subjects of David. He rose up early longing to use the subjects of David, to turn the subjects of David against David. Like David, he was like Satan, he was very eager and he was very tireless in his efforts. And you may become tired and you may become weary, but mark it down, Satan does not. He is tireless in his efforts. And you may call for a ceasefire, Satan doesn't. He does not honor such. Thirdly, Absalom knew where to position himself. Notice again verse 2, he stood beside the way of the gate. So there he is with his prepared chariots and horses. Got up very early in the morning, and now he's standing outside the city gates with an agenda. Satan always has an agenda. And this agenda involved the subjects of David. Satan has an agenda. And he knows exactly where to position himself in the lives of God's people. He may position himself in a different place in your life than my life, but he knows. He knows where to position himself. And Absalom, no doubt, thought this out. And Satan will very carefully and strategically position himself in an attempt to snare the subjects of David. I guarantee you, each and every one of us, Satan has already positioned himself in our life. He already has set up his position. That position may be in the workplace. It may be in school. It may be somewhere along your daily path. It may be in the home. And yes, it may be even in the church. But Satan has positioned himself, and he's out to steal the hearts of God's people. He positions himself in order to make inroads into your life. Why does he want to make inroads into your life? To steal your heart. So there he is. And as he takes his position, he looked for certain people. And it was so in verse 2 that when any man that had a controversy came to the king, he looked for those individuals who had some kind of lawsuit, who had some kind of matter that they were going to bring before the king. And he's watching for these people. Satan was seeking an audience. Satan always seeks an audience. Absalom was seeking an audience. Satan is seeking an audience. What you have to be careful of is that you do not become part of that audience. He was on the prowl. He reached out to these troubled people. Notice again here in verse 2. Absalom called unto him. Satan has a way of reaching out to God's people. Keep in mind, he does so as an enemy. He took personal interest in the people. He not only called out to them, he said, "Of what city art thou? What tribe do you belong to?" As if he was interested in them. He appeared to have their best interest at heart. He said, "See, thy matters are good and right." In other words, he got these people to explain what their problem was. He got them to explain why they were going to the king and why that this was a matter of a lawsuit. He pretended to have their personal interest at heart. And may I say, the devil does the same thing. And the devil never has your personal interest at heart. Never. Notice verse 3. "And Absalom said unto him, See, thy matters are good and right." In other words, Absalom is saying, "Well, it seems to me that you're entitled. Seems to me that you're entitled. Seems to me that you have some rights." This is how Satan works. Oh, he's interested in me. He's interested. He's taking an interest in me. Never forget what Satan's intentions are. To steal your heart. Never forget that he is the enemy of God doing the work of an enemy. It was there in his strategic place that he sought to interrupt the people's journey to the king. They were taking their matters to the king. They were on their way to the king. And there is Absalom beside the way of the gate. There he is with his prepared chariots and horses. There he is taking on the role of a friend to the subjects of David. He appears innocuous, but he's there to manipulate. He's there to deceive. He's there to seduce. He is there to interrupt the people's journey to the king. Satan's a master at it. He's a master at interrupting your journey to the king. And what he ended up saying to the people, he said, "Your matters are good and right. You are entitled to some things. But there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee." As they're on their way to the king, he says, "Psst, you might as well handle it yourself. You might as well just handle it yourself. Because the king isn't doing anything. Look around. God isn't doing anything," Satan says. "You need to take this matter. You need to handle this matter yourself. There's no use for you to go to the king." This is what Absalom was saying. "You need to just take matters in your own hands, because you know what? King David, he's not handling things like he should. So you need to just take care of it yourself." Satan's a master. He's a master. Satan, with malicious intent, will position himself to interrupt your journey to the king. And you know how he does it? The same way Absalom did. He doesn't just jump in front of you and say, "Hey, I'm the enemy of God, come with me." That's all Absalom did.
He never even mentioned David by name. He just made some suggestions. He just planted some seed. Satan is the master seed planter. He's the master. He was there in his strategic place to interrupt their journey and to discourage them. Verse 3, see thy matters are good and right. You deserve compensation, my friend. You're entitled, my friend. But I've got bad news for you. That king, he's not doing anything. Your God, he's not doing anything. He seeks to discourage. Again, by just making suggestion. What he was doing was seeking to promote discontent. That's what the devil does. Discontent with God. I talked to a lady this last week. She said, I'll be honest with you, I'm mad at God. Because my life hasn't turned out like it should. I said, you ever happen to think that maybe you have something to do with the way your life's turned out? Has that thought ever crossed your mind? It hadn't. That's what Satan does. He seeks to stir up discontent with God. He seeks to stir up dissatisfaction toward God's government over them. He seeks to discourage. He seeks to demoralize the hearts of the subjects of God. Some may already be there. You better stop. You better stop where you are. He was there in his strategic place to plant doubt. When he said, there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee, he was planting the seed of doubt concerning David. He was saying, he was planting that seed. You know what? David really doesn't care about me. So all he had to do was plant. He didn't come out and say, David doesn't care about you. He just planted seed. The king hasn't deputed anybody here. And knowing the human mind, jumps to what conclusion? David don't care about me. David doesn't care about me. Here I am. I deserve compensation. I'm entitled to some things. And David doesn't care. And that's what Satan does. He plants that seed. God doesn't care. God doesn't care about you. You're nothing in the eyes of God, is what Satan suggests. He was there in his strategic place to suggest that there was a better way. Notice verse 4. Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man that hath any suit or cause might come unto me. I do him justice. So there he is, with his prepared chariots and horses, standing by the way of the gate, with his eyes upon certain ones, suggesting, my friend, your life would be better if you just give place to me. Things would go better with you if you just give place to me. Things will never, ever, ever be better by giving Satan a place of authority in your life. Never. Absalom, with his suggestion, also, or with his planting the seed, was suggesting that he was more interested in their well-being than David. And he also suggested, because he said in the latter part of verse 4, if it was me, you would have justice. Well, what's the implication of that? David didn't treat you right. You can't expect justice with David, but if I was in charge, things would be better. This is how Satan works. And he was there to allure them into his service. So there he is with his prepared chariots and horses, standing by the way of the gate, with his eyes upon certain subjects of David, intending to weaken their loyalty, intending to draw them into his ways. And then we want to see the tragic results. I've only got about 2 more hours to go. I'm obviously not going to finish. But we read the tragic results. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. This was his intent in order to achieve his cause against David. Make no mistake about it. Be not deceived in this matter. Do not lose sight of this. Satan is after the hearts of God's people. Make no mistake about it, Satan has his eye upon you. And he has positioned himself somewhere in your life to steal your heart. We cannot serve God without the heart. We cannot be loyal to God without the heart. We cannot be devoted and submissive to God without the heart. We cannot love, we are to love the Lord with our heart. We're to obey the Lord with our heart. We're to trust the Lord with our heart. We're to pray to the Lord with our heart. We're to seek Him with our heart. We're to serve Him with our heart. We're to follow Him with our heart. Without the heart, we become mere formalists. Satan has stolen the hearts of God's people. Satan, or Absalom, sought to sow seeds that would destabilize the hearts of the subjects of David, that would unsettle their hearts toward David. He sought to sow seeds that would corrupt their hearts, that would contaminate their hearts, and that would embitter their hearts toward David. And Satan, he's the master. Again, he's the master seed planter. And he will do everything he can to sow seeds of discontent. He will do everything he can to alienate the affections from the Lord. And just as Absalom was tireless in his efforts to usurp the authority of David, Satan is relentless. He's tireless to usurp the authority of God in your life. Notice, and we're skipping much here, but notice the sad, sad result of having their hearts stolen. And the order here is important. Verse 6, again, so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Verse 12. Latter part of the verse, for the people increased continually with Absalom. That is the result of having their hearts stolen. Absalom began to have followers. You will not follow Satan until your heart is stolen. Their hearts were stolen. Numbers began to increase. And today, in our churches, this may upset some folks, perhaps you need to get upset. The numbers are increasing of followers after Absalom. And you know why? Because their hearts have been stolen. Their hearts have been stolen. Then notice verse 13. There came a messenger to David saying,
the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. That is, they now feel more loyalty and devotion to Absalom than they do to David, as a result of their hearts being stolen. So we have these people, they are now aligned with Absalom. And the truth today is this: you're either aligned with God or you're aligned with the devil. Jesus said, if you're not with me, you're against me. Now, that's pretty plain. So you, everyone here today is aligned either with God or the devil. I'm talking about saved individuals. This aligning with Absalom led to ruin. Notice chapter 18. Again, reading with verse 6. So the people went out into the field against Israel. This is talking about the followers of Absalom. And the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David. And there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. God's people are being slaughtered. They are being slaughtered by Satan because they've aligned with him. You align with Absalom, you align with Satan, and you are on a road of slaughter. Verse 8. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. The end was not good for the followers of Absalom. And the end is not good for the followers of Satan. All of this causes us to emphasize Proverbs 4:23 even more. Keep thy heart with all diligence. Guard and garrison your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Satan is after your heart. He is after your heart. And once he has your heart, it's almost hopeless. There were some that remained faithful. Quite a contrast between those who followed Absalom. Verse 15, the king's servants said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever the Lord thy king shall appoint. Who are we following today? Can we say with these, Lord, whatever it is, we're here. We're ready. And I like that word ready. Behold, thy servants are ready. We're prepared. We're willing. We're eager to do whatever it is that you want. Lord, you just say the word, and we're ready. Can you say that today? Or has your heart been stolen? Notice Ittai, he was a foreigner. He is one that just came on the scene. And David didn't feel right that Ittai should be willing to give his life since he just came over a few days ago. So David tried to tell Ittai, you just go back to the king, or who he thought was going to be the next king, Absalom. In verse 21, and Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord liveth and as my lord the king liveth, surely what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be. David, I'm going to follow you wherever you go. And if it means death, that will not deter me, David. I'm going to follow you. And if it means life, I'm going to follow you. In other words, David, the results don't matter. Whether I live or die, I'm going to follow you. Something to intervene in your life before you are.